Nowadays, many science and engineering disciplines require far more applications than ever before in their scientific workflows. In many cases, a single job needs to run multiple simulation applications at different scales, along with the data analysis, in-situ visualization, machine learning, and AI. Users found again and again, the existing solutions significantly limit what they can do their science, and Flux provide innovative solutions for them to do their science much more easily and without having to worry about the workload manager itself slowing things down.
Hi, in this podcast, we explore the efforts of the Department of Energy's Exascale Computing Project, ECP, from the development challenges and achievements to the ultimate expected impact of exascale computing on society. In this episode, we delve into a software framework developed at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, LLNL, called Flux, that's widely used around the world. Flux enables science and engineering work that couldn't be done before. For the discussion, we're joined by Dong An, Stephen Herbine, Dan Milroy, and Tapasya Putki of LLNL and the Flux team. Our topics: Flux's grassroots origin, benefits, importance to science and engineering, and more. Exascale computing is the next leap forward in computing. It will provide the capability to tackle challenges in scientific discovery and national security at levels of complexity and performance that previously were out of reach. The U.S. Department of Energy's Exascale Computing Project, ECP, is delivering a capable and sustainable exascale computing ecosystem to open new pathways of discovery and provide breakthrough solutions. I'm your host, Scott Gibson, and this is Let's Talk Exascale. Flux is a software framework that manages and schedules scientific workflows to make the most of computing and other resources and enable applications to run faster and more efficiently. Dong, will you get us going by sharing why Flux was created and outlining a bit of its history?
I'll speak to how our Flux project started, because this can actually tell a lot about the problems that it is good at solving. So in the beginning, Flux was a very grassroots effort. It was started when Livermore's in-house system software experts realized that traditional workload managers that were in use in Livermore was a bit too brittle for future use. So we should be modest, but we were pretty qualified to call it. In fact, Livermore Computing has a long history of designing workload managers such as LCRM and Slurm, which have had a worldwide adoption. And some of the founding members of Flux are actually some of those principal engineers behind these solutions. So it goes back to nearly 8 to 9 years ago. Looking forward to the next decades to come, we realized that two of the strongly emerging trends that just begun to affect HPC workload managers would continue into the decades to come and would negatively affect us in a greater degree. So one trend was what I call the resource challenge. Back then, hardware vendors had begun to incorporate various specialized hardware beyond CPU, which included things like GPUs and burst buffers. So the traditional solutions with homogeneous compute node and compute core centric assumptions were already being increasingly hard pressed in coping with the so-called heterogeneous hardware environment. So the problem would never become any easier if left to chances. So the other trend was that users' workloads running on the HPC systems, they were also quickly changing from single MPA jobs to rather complex interdependent jobs and tasks that need to be managed all together in a highly sophisticated fashion. This pattern was created as researchers increasingly embrace a much more complex scientific workflows. So indicatively, we already saw back then so many domain-specific workflow managers with a lot of redundant business logic implemented across them to support those emerging workflows. And this produced rather unwieldy workflow software ecosystem. One system really cannot interoperate with another at all. And a large part of that reason was that the system's workload managers they must interact with were rather too simple and don't provide necessary capabilities. So these resource and workflow challenges really call for a fundamental rethinking in software design. And the amount of effort to band an existing solution to meet these emerging requirements would be much greater than that of a new software design and rewrite. So by all means, we all knew that our goal was a giant undertaking, but our vision for next-gen workload manager software was compelling enough and well-received by our stakeholders within the DOE, ASC program, and then later ECP And born out of that was Flux.
Who can gain the most from using Flux?
My answer would be both computing facilities that operate large HPC systems and users who run their workflows on them. But if you ask who is gaining the most from using Flux today, it is a slightly different story. So let me begin there. So anyone who understands the amount of effort needed to replace a systems workload manager would agree that it takes a multi-year phase approach to deploy a new system solution, like replacing Slurm with Flux for all of the systems on a large center. However, Flux has these two modes of operation, one of which is called single user mode. And it turned out this actually drastically lowers the barrier to entry for end users to use Flux and gain from it before the center actually adapts it to multi-user mode as its system workload manager. You can think of it as an overlay workload manager on top of the system level workload manager like Slurm, IBM LSF, VS Pro, you name it. So this is somewhat analogous to the concept of an overlay network, which is also called software-defined network in the cloud computing. Just like they introduce an additional overlay of network on top of native network to provide networking flexibility and manageability, Flux allows users to do this on top of the native system workload manager. In fact, we mature that mode of operation first and have allowed those workflow users to do the science that were impossible before using that. So, for example, a cancer research workflow who had to couple applications at different scales on pre-exascale scale systems made a pretty powerful testimony that they couldn't do this without Flux on Livermore Sierra and Oak Ridge's Summit, and they use Flux's single user mode. And another powerful recent demonstration within the ECP community was how Exascale Additive Manufacturing, or XIM team, was able to demonstrate a 4x job throughput performance improvement by incorporating Flux into a portion of their workflow called ExaConstant. And Flux allowed them to bundle their small jobs into a large IBM LSF resource allocation and were able to run them all together with only about five lines of change in their script. And then they also use Flux's single user mode. So in these use cases, one thing we shouldn't forget about is though that when users actually use Flux like this, all of the interactions that users' workflow will have to do are completely isolated within Flux. That is, without having to affect the system level workload managers share resources. If massive job records coming from such a workflow every second hits a center-wide shared Slurm's job database, this can actually lead to a significant performance degradation of the workflow itself, as well as of all the jobs running on the entire center. So in fact, UIUC's PCF Center's Flux use case 2 years ago actually provided pretty good insight about that. A user in that program used Flux for their optimization workflow and immediately gain a 2x job throughput improvement on a Livermore system. But it also turned out that once this was done, their workflow drastically reduced the load to our Slurm centralized database too. So large computing facility who will ultimately adapt Flux's multi-user mode as a systems workload manager will routinely gain the benefits like this from Flux's divide and conquer approach at the center level. But also don't forget, traditional products are expected to increasingly give up on properly managing and scheduling extremely heterogeneous resources like GPUs, multi-tier storage, AI accelerators, and quantum computing of various configuration and cloud computing resources, as next-gen facilities will increasingly embrace this so-called extreme heterogeneity. Their gain from Flux will only become greater as well.
What do you think is the broad importance of Flux, that is, its impact on science and engineering?
A supercomputer is a tool. It is like a modern-day telescope and microscope, and it serves as a scientific instrument to advance modern science and engineering. And it is an unprecedented tool as well. It provides insight into physical processes across huge spatial scales, from the smallest to the largest object in the universe, and generates a model to predict the future for the scientists and engineers. And it is becoming a new pillar for various science and engineering disciplines as well. And as a result, the scientific applications that use supercomputers are growing each and every year. So today, these capabilities range from solving physics calculation to making better drugs for disease like cancer and COVID-19 to making better use of additive manufacturing while incorporating at the same time the new data science approaches like machine learning and artificial intelligence. So I already mentioned a few of those examples. So generally speaking, as supercomputers are used for a wider array of problems, researchers' workloads are going through fundamental changes. Until just a few years ago, many users' workloads remain quite simple. User submitted scripts containing simple sets of instructions for running a single simulation or application. And the scripts then work with a HPC workload manager such as Flux or Slurm, which assign the computing resources to complete the jobs. Nowadays, many science and engineering disciplines require far more applications than ever before in their scientific workflows. In many cases, a single job needs to run multiple simulation applications at different scales, along with the data analysis, in-situ visualization, machine learning, and AI. Users found again and again, the existing solutions significantly limit what they can do their science, and Flux provide innovative solutions for them to do their science much more easily and without having to worry about the workload manager itself slowing things down. So I'm sure we'll talk more specifics as to how Flux enables science and engineering that couldn't be done before or could be done, but in a way too expensive and not sustainable fashion.
Thanks, Dong. Stephen, please share some specifics as to how Flux helps users.
So there are three big advantages of Flux to users that we like to highlight. The first is higher job throughput, which means you're able to push more work through the system quicker. Higher throughput also enables users to run larger ensembles of jobs, which ultimately means more simulation data points and better scientific insight. And it's not that hard to achieve these speedups under Flux. As one data point, the ECP XAM, which is the additive manufacturing team, saw a 4x throughput improvement under Flux with only 5 lines of code changed. The second advantage of Flux to users is better specialization of the scheduler. So traditionally, users have to make do with whatever scheduler comes with the system that they're running on, and this includes that scheduler's specific configuration. With Flux, users can spin up their own personal Flux instance on a system, meaning they can tweak and tune the Flux scheduler to their heart's content. And we've seen several large workflows take advantage of this customizability to eke out every last ounce of performance from the system. And finally, the third major benefit of Flux to users is its portability to different computing environments. So as I mentioned, it's really easy for users to spin up their own personal Flux instance on a system. And so workflows that need to run at multiple sites no longer need to code to each site-specific scheduler. They can instead code to Flux and rely on Flux to handle the nuances of each individual site. And we actually saw this come into play when COVID-19 hit. So the National Virtual Biotechnology Lab, which is a consortium effort by several different DOE labs, was using simulations to model the spread of COVID-19. And they needed to use whatever computing cycles they could get from wherever they could get them. But they didn't have the time to target the different schedulers at each site. So instead, they programmed their workflow against Flux and then let Flux manage the intricacies of running the jobs at each individual computing center.
Thanks, Stephen. Now let's discuss a couple of Flux use cases. I understand you have examples from computational biology, for example, the RAS protein, which is responsible for up to a third of cancers. You mentioned COVID-19. There's the COVID-19 small molecule antiviral project. What are the highlights from some of the examples?
So the RAS protein simulation workflow for cancer research is one that I typically use as a real-world case that illustrate how complex users' workflows are becoming and how quickly the capabilities of even the best-in-class workload managers are being outpaced by that. So let me begin there. So it is one of the successful workflows that ran on Sierra during its early science phase. It is from the MUMI project, where life science and biomedicine researchers are developing a new capability to study RAS protein, because RAS, when it's mutated, is implicated in 1/3 of human cancers. Ideally, if they can simulate these RAS proteins at the micromolecular dynamics level, then they'll get what they need. But the space and time requirements of MD simulations are such that you cannot really do that at a biologically meaningful scale, even on pre-exascale machines, or even exascale machines to come. So they use a workflow approach as a solution, combining simulations at different scales. So they use a continuum-based application to simulate these genes at the membrane level. And then they ran on MD application, DDCMD, to simulate the most interesting region on the membrane at a fine-grained MD level. And then they use a machine learned model in the middle to determine which regions on the membrane are most interesting to do the fine-grained simulations on. This is a highly innovative approach, but when they met Sierra for the first time, it wasn't really pretty at all. In particular, scheduling all these different simulations and other components, each with vastly different time and resource requirements, was particularly challenging for the system's workload manager like IBM LSF to handle. So they came to Flux to solve the problem. Here is a sort of gist of their solution. Their domain workflow manager of choice was Maestro. And then they developed a Flux adapter to it to manage the resources using Flux as a backend. And they allowed them, you know, this solution allowed them to chop up the resources allocated by IBM LSF and to run heterogeneous components across different sets of resources, like running macro simulation at about 500 nodes using a subset of the resources, like 20 cores per each node, and use every GPU to run small MD simulations. And to do this, they specialize in scheduling policies of Flux using its flexibility in many different ways to get the performance they need and resource match behavior that they need. In fact, if you crack open a compute node that is running the Mumi workflow, you will quickly find at least they have five distinct tasks, you know, are running with a pretty sophisticated layout, like 10 cores per socket for macro model and one GPU per MD simulation along with a core closest to GPU, very complicated. So overall, being able to do this without Flux was a very difficult thing to do for the team. And overall, Flux was essential for them to be successful. And they succeeded. As a one indication of their success, they won the Best Paper Award at Supercomputing 19 for its innovative workflow approach. So in terms of that best ML-based COVID-19 anti-drug molecule design workflow, I should say this is part of a large multidisciplinary effort at Livermore to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. In May 2020, a team was formed at Livermore with a goal to develop a new, highly scalable end-to-end drug design workflow that can expediently produce potential COVID-19 drug molecules for further clinical testing. So this team brought together multiple scientific experts like LBAN, Scalable AI Toolkit, Atom, Generative Molecular Design, or GMD pipeline, and ConvailLC docking simulation. After a few meetings, though, this team quickly discovered that creating such a end-to-end solution based upon the existing components could present a very difficult challenge, workflow problems especially. And thankfully, they found that Flux could comprehensively solve them. So in the interest of time, I'll skip the technical details, but I'll say that Flux's fully hierarchical scheme was nearly ideal to overcome the scalability limitations of two of the major components that this workflow needed to couple, namely the ConvailLC docking simulation application and GMD pipeline. And Flux's fully hierarchical approach allowed the GMD to be able to manage a large ensemble of small docking simulation jobs as one unit, such a way that both the docking jobs and GMD work well within their scalability limitation envelopes. So based upon the Flux-enabled end-to-end workflow blueprint, this team actually submitted the first paper focusing on large machine learning training to the COVID-19 special category of the ACM Golden Bell Prize in last year's supercomputing, and they made one of the four finalists. And this team plans to submit the workflow-based result to the same award for supercomputing this year as well. So other than that, I already mentioned the ECPXIAM use case and UIUC PSET Center use case. We have a lot more, but we are at a point where we can't really track all the use cases. So at this point, let me stop there. But I'll say, you know, that one of the common threads from these use cases is that Flux makes workflow jobs stand on the equal footing as the traditional large, long-running MPI jobs on large HPC systems enabling modern science.
Stephen, in straightforward layperson language, will you describe for us how Flux works? And if you don't mind, please help us understand the terminology along the way. For example, divide and conquer in the context of Flux.
So have you ever been under a tight deadline and thought, man, I wish I could clone myself to get this work done quicker? Well, okay. That's essentially what Flux can do. It can clone itself and then use that divide and conquer approach that you mentioned to get through the work much quicker, where each Flux instance is taking a different chunk of work and resources to schedule. With enough clones, though, things can get quite messy as to organizing and managing who's working on what. So Flux enforces a strict hierarchy where higher level Flux instances help manage and coordinate the lower ones, much like you might see in a business structure. And so these hierarchies are made from by the fact that each Flux instance is empowered to create its own child instance, its own nested child instance that manages a subset of the jobs and resources of the parent. And each one of these children can be customized and tuned for the work it's going to handle. So in a business setting, you can imagine every manager is empowered to hire their own workers that they can then delegate tasks to. And so this nesting capability comes in handy for more than just divvying up work. It's also the reason why Flux is so portable across systems. When a child Flux instance is spinning up underneath a parent Flux instance, it has to have a way to learn about the resources that it inherited from its parent. And there's already a well-known standard for this. It's called the Process Management Interface, or PMI, which is the same interface that the very popular MPI runtime uses when it spins up. So child Flux instances know how to speak PMI in order to get information from their parents. This is great because every HPC scheduler out there also speaks PMI, which means that Flux can easily talk to every HPC scheduler to discover what resources are available for scheduling jobs. And so this standard use of interfaces is why Flux can be so portable across so many systems. So in summary, Flux's ability to nest inside of itself and create this hierarchy gives you sort of a big bang for your buck because you get better throughput because you can divvy up the work across many Flux instances. You can specialize each one of those, and then it also makes it easy to spin up Flux underneath other schedulers.
Thanks. Dan, a key feature of Flux is its ability to model system resources as a directed graph. Please explain the components and dynamics involved.
So basically, a directed graph is a mathematical object with a corresponding data structure, representation in computer science, that associates objects, also known as vertices, through directed relationships, which are considered to be edges. So for example, a social media network is a directed graph. Users are vertices, and then communications between two users are edges, where the direction itself can be defined by the user that initiates contact. So in the case of Flux, a vertex can be a hardware resource, so such as a CPU or a compute node, and an edge can indicate containment. So in other words, for example, a server contains a CPU inside of it. Relying on a directed graph to represent resources allows Flux to manage and schedule larger and more heterogeneous and dynamic systems where resources can be disused or fail or change price. Managing scheduling complex combinations of resources that change over time requires elevating resource relationships to parity with resources themselves, which favors a representation that encodes this sort of information in both vertices and edges. Now, using a directed graph as a foundation for resource representation provides Flux with several key capabilities. The first one is really flexibility. Any type of resources such as hardware, software, power distribution units, et cetera, can be a vertex. Fully hierarchical scheduling, as Stephen was mentioning, assumes actually a really elegant form when it's based on a directed graph model. Each Flux instance manages and schedules a subgraph, which is a subset of the vertices and edges of that resource graph, where a child instance's resources are actually a subgraph of its parents. Beyond that, a tremendous number of algorithmic techniques and optimized software libraries exist for fast operations on directed graphs. So by basing its resource model on a directed graph, Flux can really quickly check resource states and schedule allocations, transform resource representations, add and remove dynamic resources, and all sorts of other useful operations. Scheduling operations themselves, in the context of directed graphs, are really basic procedures. So to request an allocation, a user specifies their needs, and then Flux actually transforms those needs into a directed graph, which it uses as a template to find matching resources in the system resource model. Finding the resources amounts to checking resource vertices for availability, which Flux performs with its highly optimized implementation of depth-first search. Flux enhances the directed graph with additional data structures as well that enable sophisticated search. So in Flux's directed graph model, each resource vertex embeds something called a planner, which is an efficient data structure that allows for fast lookup for the next resource availability. So instead of performing a depth-first search of the entire resource graph, Flux actually uses a filtration mechanism that bypasses portions or subgraphs of the resource graph that are unavailable. High-level vertices, for example, containing pruning filters can track the counts of available lower-level resources. And if a depth-first search encounters not enough low-level counts or resources at the pruning filter, the entire subgraph can just be skipped. So once Flux selects matching resource subgraph, it updates those pruning filters to reflect a new job allocation. Updating the filters immediately accelerates further searches, which reduces resource allocation time and improves the scheduler throughput. Future computing is going to need more flexibility and dynamism, and the ability to change the graph model in any way at any time is another one of Flux's primary features. So adding or removing resources is a straightforward matter of well-known graph editing techniques for just basically inserting or adding or deleting subgraphs. And unlike existing schedulers and resource managers, Flux allows for dynamic transformation of its resource model without manual reconfiguration and restart of the scheduler, which further facilitates automated changes in resource relationships and addition or removal of resources.
Tapasya, will you speak to the flexibility and open source aspects of Flux?
Sure, Scott. So Flux can easily run on a single user's laptop or an entire supercomputing center and anything in between. So that addresses the flexibility question that that you just brought up. Users can kick off a Flux-managed workflow and monitor its progress with just a few commands. And it is flexible enough to be integrated with system schedulers and workflow managers if that's what a user needs. Broad applicability is only meaningful if other users and facilities can benefit from Flux's capabilities. And that is why we've made Flux open source. So users outside of our lab can take advantage of its fully hierarchical resource management, as well as its graph modeling capabilities in their own scientific computing workflows. Flux is already making a big impact across the world with its flexible capabilities. In order to support the open source community, our development team regularly gives tutorials, presentations, and workshops to help users get started with Flux and to answer their questions. So our documentation website provides clear instructions and examples, along with several presentations and related publications. And we also engage users and announce Flux releases on GitHub as well as Twitter.
Thanks, Tapasya. Dan, what's your perspective on the degree to which users are adopting Flux, including evidence you've seen of worldwide use?
So as Dong actually mentioned when he was talking about the single user mode of Flux, that has actually really facilitated adoption of Flux. And as a result, we're seeing it being adopted at worldwide scale. So Flux is actually being used at over 50 institutions worldwide, including our collaborators in both the United States and European academic institutions, U.S. national labs, U.S. military and federal agencies, and domestic and international scientific computing and HPC centers such as NERSC in California and RIKEN in Japan, which is home of the currently top-rated Fugaku supercomputer. Now, Dong actually also mentioned a central level adoption, and the center level adoption for multi-user mode is going to require more time and effort, and we are doing kind of last mile development for this to extend our success. And as Tapasya was mentioning, the Flux team has been working really hard to provide a lot of documentation, hold tutorials, and engage with developers early on to help them design their workflows on top of Flux. So this is all kind of contributing to the adoption as well. So we're currently testing Flux on a testbed machine and plan to deploy it on a CTS2 system at the laboratory in early next year. And then also the upcoming Exascale El Capitan system, where it's actually the plan of record scheduler. And we're hoping our success is really expected to be replicated there.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Now to Stephen. What's in store in the near future for Flux development?
We've really been focusing our development around those two system milestones that Dan just mentioned. So in particular, deploying on our commodity Linux clusters, which we call CTS2, and the upcoming exascale system, El Capitan. And so for the CTS2 systems, we're focusing on improving the resiliency of Flux to node failures, particularly nodes that are intermediates in our tree-based overlay network. And in addition, we're adding features to the privilege component of Flux, that is the component of Flux that uses root permissions, and so it is the most vulnerable to exploitation. And so we want to make sure it's very secure that we have it right. So we're adding features to that for feature parity with other HPC schedulers. And for El Capitan, we're focusing on interfacing with HPE, who's the vendor that's providing that system, integrating with their system software. That includes their interface for bootstrapping Cray MPI, their common tools interface for launching debuggers and tools, and then their Rabbit.io subsystem. So the Rabbit.io system actually presents some interesting resource challenges that Flux's graph scheduler that Dan was describing earlier is uniquely qualified to handle. In particular, there are SSDs at the top of each rack in El Capitan, and those SSDs will be configurable at schedule time to either be accessible to the nodes within the same rack via PCI Express. And so that means those nodes get really fast, very low latency connections, or the SSDs could be configured to be accessible to nodes anywhere in the cluster via the network, but it can't have both accessibility modes at the same time. And so this ability to dynamically switch the access pattern in the associated locality, so nodes must be in the same rack as the SSDs that they're trying to access via PCI Express, that requires extra intelligence and constraint satisfaction by the scheduler. And Flux's graph scheduler is uniquely capable of doing that.
And finally, how is Flux getting set for the post-exascale era?
So we are preparing for even, post-exascale era. And then, one of the key features of that era will be a convergence of high-performance computing with the cloud computing. So I'd like Dan to cover some of those aspects because he's the subject matter expert on that topic.
Thank you, Dong. So HPC is really seeing an increasing demand for cloud technologies at this point. And cloud is one of, or really the dominant market player in computing now. And we're expecting to see greater integration of its research and development in HPC in the future. So we're seeing a future of what's called converged computing, which we consider to be an environment that combines the best features of HPC, such as performance and efficiency and schedule and sophisticated scheduling, with those of the cloud, which are resiliency, elasticity, portability, and manageability. So now cloud bursting might be the most well-known type of converged computing, and we've done quite a bit of research on how Flux can actually facilitate cloud bursting in a very flexible way by combining the fully hierarchical scheduling with its directed graph resource model. So as we've kind of been talking about a little bit, we have a parent and child relationship with nested instances where a child, if it requires more instances, can ask its parent for more. And in this case, if the parent doesn't have more resources, it becomes the child in this hierarchy and then can ask its parent whether it has more resources and kind of so on up this hierarchy. Now, cloud can be considered kind of just another parent in this relationship. And if the top level parent doesn't have satisfactory resources, it can then ask the cloud. So then those resources can be delivered by the cloud and then integrated at each level all the way down the hierarchy until it gets to the requesting leaf. So that's one of the things that we put a lot of work into researching from the scheduling side, at least. Now we're noticing other trends as well in the converged workflows, both at the laboratory and at other major institutions and within industry as well. So as applications are starting to demand tighter integration with cloud orchestration, such as Kubernetes, a major challenge that we're seeing is actually scheduling and managing resources that kind of use both HPC resource management managers and orchestrators at the same time. And we forged a collaboration with IBM TJ Watson and Red Hat OpenShift to tackle a lot of these research related challenges with scheduling and managing converged computing resources.
Thanks to each of you for being here.
Thank you very much. This was very useful.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
So long for now. We hope you'll join us next time for Let's Talk Exascale.